From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Governor Gavin Newsom is no stranger being a Democratic leader on a national stage. Within the past year, he was the verbal muscle for the Biden campaign during re-election attempts and would spar with conservatives like Governor Ron DeSantis, even going on Fox News for a debate moderated by Sean Hannity. And in the weeks after the election, Governor Newsom called a special legislative session to buffer California from a second Trump presidency. But this year, there has been a shift in Newsom's approach as he closes in on his final term with an uncertain political future. Earlier this month, the governor launched a new podcast called This is Gavin Newsom, and the first episode sent some shockwaves over his exchanges with high-profile conservative guests, leaving some allies, even some critics, doing a double take on Newsom's priorities. I sat down with Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald and Cap Matters Capital reporter Alexi Kossoff for a conversation about how this latest media venture is shaping the state capitol. Alexi and Laura, thanks for taking the time.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for having us.
So this latest podcast from Governor Gavin Newsom, This is Gavin Newsom, it's gotten a lot of buzz. It's been out now for about 3 weeks. What has stood out to you, Alexi, just about the national and the media attention that this has received?
Well, it's been really interesting to watch what a splash this has made across the whole political spectrum. You know, we are used to Newsom sort of popping his head up every once in a while and becoming a national figure again, but I wasn't expecting it to be because he expressed opinions on this podcast that everybody cared about. And yet, through some of these conversations he's had with these very prominent conservative figures like Charlie Kirk or Steve Bannon, he's made actual national news, including especially around changing his position on the fairness of transgender athletes in girls and women's sports.
Yeah. We can take for granted, because we're journalists and we're tapped in, that we know that this is his second podcast and that I'm sure you've listened to every episode. But for people who don't walk in this medium of audio regularly, why is the governor getting into podcasts?
It's a great question. I think that's what everybody's wondering. You know, is this a way for him to build up his profile, remind people that he exists so that he can run for office again, you know, maybe the presidential election in 2028? Or is there something else going on? Is he trying to make a pivot into podcasting and become, you know, a media entrepreneur in the future? It hasn't really been clear, but for right now, what he's just sort of saying is the Democrats are lost in the wilderness, and I want to have these conversations with people from the left, from the right, to help us figure out a path forward for the party.
Right. So his first guests are really well-known conservatives in the conservative political realm, of course. And it's about talking about people that he disagrees with civility, of course. And this is following the election. But Laura, it wasn't that long ago when Newsom was really the muscle behind the Biden campaign. I remember he debated Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on Fox News. Sean Hannity was the moderator. The news cycle is just so relentless. Can we slow down a little bit and look at the timeline? Because it does seem like there's been this shift in how the governor is talking politically to a public and a wide audience.
Yeah, totally. I think the thing that I noticed, and you know, I'm not the only one, I think we all noticed this in the media and the Capitol Press Corps, is that, you know, when Trump was reelected in November, Newsom came out strong again, calling a special session, saying we are going to secure funds to be able to sue the Trump administration, which he sued the Trump administration multiple times during his first presidency. And then in January, the wildfires in LA hit. And that really changed the tone for the start of the legislative session. Suddenly, Newsom was kind of in a delicate situation of, as he's in the middle of this special session to basically fight back against the Trump administration, he's having to go and kind of kiss the ring and say, hey, I need federal funding because it's the most expensive fire damage in California history, and we wouldn't be able to do it, you know, on the state budget alone. And so it was kind of a delicate balance that he had to walk. And suddenly, I think I noticed that Newsom's messaging around the Trump special session really changed. You know, he kind of started pushing back on the term Trump-proofing, which had kind of become popular in the media, and said, well, the media calls it that, but that's not what I'm calling it. And so there was a definite tone switch. And I think in November, he came out really strong, you know, full force, and that really slowed down because of the fires, and that dynamic changed everything.
Yeah, Alexia, I see you nodding along. I remember during those wildfires when President Trump came to California, didn't even really extend an invitation to Governor Newsom. He had to meet him at the tarmac. What stood out to you about that time in a way that you think is shaping his political strategy and his posturing now?
Well, I think one thing that's worth noting is that Gavin Newsom got really good sort of response to the way that he handled Trump during the fires. You know, there was this sense from a lot of, you know, political observers, people within the political sphere, that he handled that balancing act very well. And, you know, it was in a tremendously difficult situation, but he, by going down to LA and meeting with Trump, you know, he kind of diffused the situation, got the president on his side, and it hasn't quite paid off yet in terms of the money that he's seeking, but, you know, there's still that hope. And so I think he may be responding to this sense that, okay, that bipartisan, cooperative leadership kind of role is a good look for him, and he's trying to find ways to carry that forward, even as he shifts back into maybe a more traditional kind of political posture that he has.
So this podcast launched 3 weeks ago, earlier this month, and we now have a handful of episodes. The first episodes, as I mentioned, they welcome these high-profile conservatives. You have a 31-year-old conservative activist, Charlie Kirk, as well as Dr. Michael Savage, who's a longtime conservative commenter. Of course, the former Trump White House chief strategist and the MAGA architect, Steve Bannon. But then you also have vice presidential candidate Governor Tim Walz on, and the most recent one, Ezra Klein, who is the New York Times opinion columnist. You've listened to them, Alexi. What stands out to you about the guest selections in the first batch of episodes?
Yeah, I mean, it's a real juxtaposition between the first three episodes and then the most recent two. And I don't know that you can say there's a real coherent identity to what the show is trying to be yet. What I will say I've noticed about all of the episodes is that there is a tendency for Newsom to just be very, you know, he's not really pushing back or debating with any of the guests the way that he, you know, sort of promised in the way he pitched the show. This is more him sort of sitting there letting them speak, and he kind of goes along with it. And it's interesting to watch him sort of take shape, ideological shape, alongside whatever guest he has. You know, there are a few moments here or there where he'll push back on things like the existence of climate change or something like that. But I mean, there was a very notable moment to me in the episode with Steve Bannon. It was within the first 5 minutes of that episode where Steve Bannon says twice in quick succession that Trump won the 2020 election and Joe Biden stole that election. Newsom didn't even acknowledge it, didn't push back on it at all, just brushed right past it and kept the conversation moving. So I think if anything, he's kind of shifting a little bit away from kind of that political fighter that we're used to him being, and sort of being this sounding board almost for anyone and any idea.
So given that this has received a lot of attention nationally, I would think there's been buzz around the Capitol about this, whether privately, if not publicly. Laura, I mean, you go to the Capitol a lot. Is there an awareness that this podcast is happening?
Yeah, for sure. It's what a lot of folks are talking about. And I think it has left a lot of both like lawmakers, advocates, just people in the Capitol community kind of scratching their heads, trying to make sense of, you know, this shift. The lawmakers that I spoke to, it was right after the first episode came out, and that was the episode when he said that he had reservations about trans athletes participating in women's and girls' sports. And so I think that like set a really shocking tone for like the first episode right out of the gate. And I mean, I spoke with multiple members in the LGBTQ caucus who were really deeply hurt and frustrated and clapped back very strongly against Newsom for those comments and saying that they felt that he had been an ally to their community for decades, even going back to when he was mayor of San Francisco. And I think they were mostly pretty shocked. But Alexi should weigh in, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all of that is exactly what I've been hearing, too. And I think what I would add is that all those people are not sure how seriously to take what he's saying on the podcast as an indication of how he might shift his governing. And they're sort of wondering, is he also going to be less receptive to the kind of work that we've, you know, traditionally done? Is he going to want to veto bills that he might have been willing to sign in previous years? They don't know how much, you know, this podcast is an indication of a move toward the center in terms of the way he's leading California as well and what that might mean for their work. So I think everybody's kind of holding their breath to see how this continues to develop. Obviously, there's about 6 more months until any bills will make it to his desk. But people don't want to waste their time, you know, on big issues that they know aren't going to be successful. And so I think everybody's kind of scrambling to figure out if they have to change their agendas, basically, to kind of suit a different governor than they thought they had.
I know Laura mentioned that the LGBTQ plus caucus expressed, you know, their dismay and being hurt by that specific exchange on his podcast. But outside of that, has there been some public pushback from Democrats in California?
I think average voters have been pretty upset, you know, like your sort of Democratic listeners, let's say, who saw him for so many years as kind of the number one fighter against Trump and are just kind of like not sure what to make of him now. There's actually been some interesting public polling that Paul Mitchell, who's a polling expert in California, has done. And he polled 1,000 listeners before the show and after the first few episodes, played some clips for them to get public reaction. And Newsom's approval among the listeners who identified as Democrats went down by a significant amount. And so if that kind of continues, it could create a problem for him if he is trying to look, you know, for a path forward in a presidential primary, for example, in 2028.
What about the leaders at the state capitol? Are they saying anything?
Among them, I feel like it's actually been much more quiet because I think everybody's afraid to sort of get on his bad side. I mean, people are being very diplomatic. They're sort of expressing their confusion, maybe some trepidation around the type of guests that he's having, things like that. But I think people are also really quick to emphasize that it's good of him to talk to people from across the aisle and reach out, and they support all of that. So the conversations behind the scenes are a different tone than what's happening publicly.
Well, both of you spoke with former Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon. We're going to play some of Laura's interview. Just get listeners up to speed. Why is he important?
Yeah, I mean, Anthony Rendon was the speaker for most of Gavin Newsom's time as governor in California, and he was a longtime speaker. He only recently passed the gavel off, you know, about a year ago or so. And so he has a lot of experience working with the governor and working with the Senate to strike legislative deals and, you know, especially during crazy times, end of session. You know, I had actually reached out to him to interview him about something else, but it was the day after the podcast dropped. And so I wanted to ask him what's your reaction to this? Because we're all trying to make sense of it. And, you know, he said, I didn't know he had a podcast. He spends a lot of time with his daughter now, I think. But we can play the clip of what he said.
I didn't know he had a podcast. I didn't know he had reservations. I think trans rights are very important. And I think we need to tread very carefully if we're going to begin to curtail civil rights for people.
Okay, so that was the day after the first podcast. It's now been a couple of weeks. Alexi, have you touched base with Rendon? Does he have a deeper opinion of this?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to him about a week and a half ago or so for a story that I was working on. And he basically was, I think, as confused as everybody else. You know, as Laura said, he had worked with Newsom in this era when the state was being sort of the bulwark of the resistance. And I think he was sort of concerned, like many people are, about not losing California's values and its position to sort of be a strong voice for certain democratic values, even if you are trying to make this effort to be more bipartisan and cooperative and all those things. And I think the most interesting thing he told me is that when he's been talking to former colleagues in the assembly about it, you know, the most common reaction he said he gets is just WTF, you know? And I think that about, you know, captures it for everybody, just uncertainty about what this is for and what it means ultimately.
And of course, this is Trump's second presidency. And Laura, you did share another clip that we're going to play where Rendon does go back to the first Trump presidency and how it shaped the Democratic Party. And we could talk about what's different this go around.
I do think what Trump did do that was beneficial was there was, you know, we're a big tent party. The Democratic Party is a big tent party. I wonder if we're sometimes too big a tent party. But I think during that time, particularly during the early years of that time, he helped to bring us together as Democrats. I think that was probably had more unity as California Democrats during the first Trump presidency than I ever remember.
So, Laura, when you're at the state capitol talking to Democratic lawmakers, do you get a sense of where that unity kind of stands right now?
I think it's what I expected when the special session was called. And I was, you know, I think the sense was, here we go again. We're going to rebrand our resistance for Trump 2.0. I think this session has been so different, you know, with everything that's happened. We had special sessions over the fall. The fires changed everything with the budget. And I think it feels this time different to me. But, you know, and I asked Rendon what he thought, and he, you know, what wasn't willing to go there since he's not in the legislature anymore. But there does seem to be more dissonance. And feel free to weigh in.
Well, I just think it just feels quieter than it did the first time around. You know, it was such, the resistance feeling was immediate in 2016, from the day after the election when Trump won on through his entire time in office. There was this real desire to push back, this feeling for members that they needed to push back. We've seen some bills introduced that do that kind of work this year, but it just has not permeated the feeling of the Capitol the way it did before. You know, I just think that people's minds are totally elsewhere, whether it's the fires or, you know, anything else that's going on. And that's just been surprising how, frankly, normal things have felt.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald and CalMatters Capitol reporter Alexi Kossoff about Governor Gavin Newsom's latest political moves and how it's shaping work at the state capitol. Well, one difference for this election compared to the last is the popular vote. President Trump did receive the popular vote. More Californians voted for Trump than last time. Vice President Harris did receive the delegates from California. So I think that is a big game changer that's probably shaping how lawmakers are reacting to a second Trump presidency. Earlier this month, there was the California GOP convention. Alexi, you were there. Do you think this podcast, Governor Gavin Newsom's new approach to talk about politics and where we are politically as a country, is it landing with Republicans?
I wouldn't say that it seems to be landing with Republicans. I spoke to some people at the convention there about the podcast. They said they'd listened to it. None of them seemed to give it very good reviews. I will say those are the hardest core of the hardcore activists, the real devotees of the party who are willing to give up a weekend to go and
make America great again.
Exactly. Absolutely. So, you know, that may not really be the target audience. I think one thing that's also notable about the polling that Paul Mitchell did that I mentioned was that it seemed to sort of, the podcast seemed to get the best response from independents. And I think that's something to really consider, that by making a bridge to Republicans, it may not be Republicans who are getting that message. It may be the people who are in the middle and want to see that bipartisan cooperation and are really like being hit in the face with that message that Gavin Newsom is trying to make right now, that I am not this crazy liberal. I am someone who can get in a room and have a conversation with people who think differently than me and work something out. And so it's a question of whether that's a big enough slice of the electorate for it to really make a difference, especially if you're losing people on the left and the right in return. But it's definitely a strategy.
Well, at least in California, no party preference voters, essentially rival voter registration for Republicans in California. So at least in our state, it's a decent chunk. And also there was this opinion piece in CalMatters this week that was pushing back on the criticism from the podcast, arguing that the rush to judge is a problem and that Newsom wasn't yielding ground. He was entering the arena, however, imperfectly. And that's a quote from this op-ed piece. So now that maybe there's been a couple of weeks for this to marinate and settle, is that a sense that perhaps the tide is turning a little bit?
You know, I wouldn't say that I feel like the tide has turned among most people. I think the fact that it went out of the gate with three episodes in a row that were all of this same ilk of Newsom really giving a platform to these conservative activists with very strong opinions that are so different than what he's pushed for his entire career, I think that really planted an idea in people's heads of what this podcast is and this rebranding that Newsom is doing. Whether or not that's fair, whether or not that sticks, whether or not, you know, a month from now the podcast looks anything like it did in that first three episodes, it's probably going to be very hard for him to shake that impression. And so perhaps a year from now, this is all forgotten. But at the moment, I feel like people are still kind of looking at him through that lens of somebody who is opportunistically, perhaps, you know, trying to rebrand as this centrist guy who can carry Democrats forward in this era when people are getting more conservative. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't need California voters to become governor again, right? Because he's termed out and this is his last 2 years as governor. Laura, what stands out to you about perhaps the last, you know, couple years in elected office for Governor Newsom? Do you think that this will actually be a lame duck period for him?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I think we're seeing, I think that's, you know, very possible as we've seen him kind of take a step back from the actual Capitol. And, you know, as reporters, like what we're having to go off of is largely this podcast at the moment. And I think the other thing is, people are noticing this shift that he's making through the podcast, but it's not the only way. You know, Newsom came out pretty hard against issuing an executive order last summer about clearing up homeless encampments. He's put a lot of that emphasis back on localities to deal with that problem. And I think many would agree that it's a pretty big scar on his legacy here in California. It's probably been one of the biggest issues California is grappling with. And then also with the return to office mandate for state workers, right, that's something else that people are kind of taking note of as he's doing this podcast pivot. Those are things that are also, I've noticed, have been part of the conversation in terms of his transition into a more centrist figure.
Outside of the podcast, what is press access currently like for the governor, Alexi?
I mean, I would say that's been a real problem over the past few months. He's just not as available as he used to be. And, you know, it was understandable in the beginning with the fires that he had a lot of other stuff that was on his plate. But it's been really interesting now these last few weeks. You know, he has not been doing public events around the Capitol with the press corps generally, even as he's been putting out these regular episodes of the podcast. And so, you know, as Laura said, the only real understanding we can get of his thinking right now is what he's saying in these long, unbroken, you know, freewheeling conversations about different stuff. And, you know, you don't really get a chance to ask any follow-up questions and really dig in on what does that mean for policy? And did you really say what you meant, or did you misspeak, or all these kinds of things like that? And last week, the governor was at the State of the Judiciary speech at the Capitol, which is an annual address by the state Supreme Court justice. And a couple of us reporters caught him outside as he was leaving. And we tried to press him on a couple of things that are happening in the state right now and get some answers. And he answered a few things and then walked away from us as we were sort of chasing him down the hall trying to get other answers. So, you know, it's hard. He's not really available in a lot of those ways. And you're almost like reading the tea leaves a little bit from the podcast.
Well, Alexi and Laura, thanks for joining us with the breakdown.
Yep. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good to talk to you.
Never a dull time. And that is my conversation with Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald and CalMatters Capitol reporter Alexi Kossoff about Governor Gavin Newsom's latest political moves and how it's shaping the state capitol. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio, where facts matter and stories inspire. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.